So I'm going to read from the book called the Bhagavad Gita. This is chapter 10, Opulence of the Absolute, text number 9. Matsita matkata prana bodhiyantas parashpuram katayantas from nityam tu shanti charamanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss. I'm always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Please repeat. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction. From always enlightening one another. And conversing about me. I left out the words about bliss. We'll try that again. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Just for information, if someone hasn't read the Bhagavad Gita, the previous verse Krishna explains that he's God. Which is not unusual because practically everyone in this material world believes they're God. So if Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says he's God, it seems normal. The difference is that Krishna actually not only believes he's God, but at least in the Bhagavad Gita he shows how he's God. God meaning not just the person who's controlling everything, but the source of everything. In other words, everything must have a source. For instance, everyone here had a father and mother, isn't that right? Did anyone say that they came from the stalk? So everyone has a father and mother, and everyone's father and mother also had a father and mother. Pretty logical so far, right? And everyone's father and grandfathers had fathers and mothers. So the question is, where do we trace out our ancestry that we wind up with a monkey? Which is, if we go back, great-great-great-great-grandmother or great-great-grandfather, which one of them was a monkey? And if they trace the monkey's ancestry back, which one was the sheep? And we keep on going back. At least in America, they have something called the black sheep. Do they have that here also?
Yes.
The black sheep in the family? So who was the black sheep in the family? That everyone talks about. And if we trace the ancestry of the sheep back, where do we find out Grandfather Squeaky? And then ultimately, according to at least some opinions, we have to trace it back to the very beginning when there was nothing. Great-great-grandfather nothing. Who always wanted to become something. And his mother was always complaining, "You're absolutely nothing. Why don't you make something out of yourself? You're an embarrassment." So after a struggle from so many centuries and billions and trillions of years, it finally became something. According to the scientists, according to their equations, it became as much gas as people usually create after a big feast. But that was pretty good for nothing. But Mother Nothing still wasn't satisfied and said, "Is that all you become? I mean, that stinks. Can't you make yourself a little bit better than that?" So finally, Nothing figured out how to condense itself into a rock. And Mother Nothing was still not satisfied. And said, although you're the most solid member of the family, still you don't seem to accomplish very much. So finally, Mr. Rock became angry, exploded, flew in all directions for billions and trillions of years, and finally Mother Dusting said, "Why don't you settle down?" And here we are now. So this is considered to be science. Of course, in the Hare Krishna movement, we consider it science fiction. Because the fact is that no one can trace out their ancestry and find out that someone in their family was a nothing. Although sometimes people criticize people for being nothing. But ultimately everyone is something, good or bad. So the original father from which everything came from, he must also be a person. Otherwise, how did we become a person? How many rocks did you have to put together to make a personality? You can go out and see it. No, because the original person was a person, therefore we're also persons. That the original person had a body, and therefore we have bodies also. Otherwise, where did our parents get their bodies from? If it wasn't from another body. So our understanding is that the original person is the most attractive person, because all the beauty that we see in this world, all the knowledge we know about, all the strength, all the fame, all the wealth, and all the renunciation, that original person embodies all those different attractive qualities. Therefore, the understanding is that to become aware of that person is the perfection of life. Just like everyone is looking for someone to love, everyone is looking for something beautiful, everyone would like some wealth, everyone would like some strength, some fame, some renunciation. So if the original person is the source of all of those things, then that original person must be all attractive. The problem is that we're not aware of that original person, and therefore we don't know whether he exists or not. But at least theoretically, we should understand that if we feel heat in this building right now, and if we find light, there must be some source of it. And the original source we can trace back to the sun. So the sun may not be present in this room, but we can infer its existence from the fact that there's heat and light in the room. And if we go outside and we see the sun, then we can understand that heat and light must have come from the sun. Such a big source. So at least theoretically we can infer that there must be an original person. Who that original person is, we may not have direct experience of that original person right now, but if there is a process of becoming more aware of that original person, then that might be the goal of our life. Since everyone is looking for some experience that will give them the maximum of happiness permanently for as long as possible. So any knowledge must mean that which will direct us to the maximum amount of happiness for the longest period of time. And if the original person is the source of everything, he must have the maximum happiness for the longest time. Now, here it says that the Krishna's devotees, they dwell in him, the lives are surrendered to him, and they discuss about how they got to that particular point of being happy in Krishna consciousness. It's not that they just go around and say, I'm a pure devotee, I'm happy in Krishna consciousness, I'm perfect. No, there must be a way of getting there. Otherwise, how did they get there? If someone says, I'm God, for instance, I'm the Supreme, then you might ask them, how did you get to become the Supreme? And of course, if they say, well, I was always the Supreme, then you just can ask them, well, what if you're always the Supreme, then what powers do you have? Like I had some friends, when I was in college, they said that they were supreme, that they were controlling everything. So I went to college in Buffalo, which was always snowing, especially in the winter. So I'd ask him if he can clear all the snow, we would appreciate it. He said I could, but I don't want to. So he may have been God, but he was a pretty useless God. On the other hand, if someone says, I become self-realized, I'm self-realized, then you can ask them, well, how did you become self-realized? Did you wake up one day and you were self-realized? And they said, yes. And then we asked them, which side of the bed did you sleep on? I'll try it out. Maybe I'll become self-realized the same way. Now, there must, if we, whatever situation we're in now, there must have been some means by which we got to that situation. Nothing happens by accident. And even if we say it happened by accident, accidents aren't accidents. If you're on the street and two cars crash into each other and the police come and say, what happened? And they say, don't worry about it, it was an accident. No, they want to find out how the accident was caused. Accidents are not caused by accident. They want to find out what was the means. So similarly, everyone is looking for some source of happiness. And everyone is claiming, I'm happy. I know how to become happy. I can tell you how to become happy. You buy this. You buy that. Matter of fact, if you ever go on the internet, generally speaking, it's full of advertisements. Everyone is advertising. Like I always get in my email something about click here and you'll find out about this. They'll solve this problem. And when you click there, they have like, you know, 20 minutes of someone telling you about their fabulous product, their fabulous way of doing things to get this fabulous result. They never tell you what it is. You're waiting there. Tell me what it is. You told me you're going to solve my problem. What is it? What's the solution? And finally, if you're patient enough after half an hour, then they go, you buy this. It's always you got to buy something or sign up for this. And the longer it is, the more expensive it is. They kind of weed you out by your patience. If you're not patient enough to listen to their half an hour spiel about how they're going to solve, how they're going to grow hair on your chest again. And on your head, possibly. Then they figure you're not foolish enough to be their customer. So they wait you out till finally the most gullible are winding up. And for only $10,000, well, actually, there's a discount. Now it's only $1,000 on this only. We'll sell you this. So everyone's doing that, and we're doing it too. We're also in the business because we're like everyone else. The difference is that we claim that the source of all pleasure, of all happiness, eternally, permanently, which is a long time, is to revive our relation with Krishna, with God. We're not claiming Krishna is a special God or he's a God in competition with all the other gods. We're claiming that all the other gods, all the gods are the same person, just maybe manifesting in a different way to a different audience. And God, if he's really God, who's controlling the universe, like for instance moving the planets in their orbit, helping us with our digestion, our assimilation, our elimination of food, that same God is the same God for everyone. It's not that God is, there's gods in competition with each other. One God was trying to digest food for us, the other one is trying to assimilate it. And they're all, no, there's only one person running the show of which we're all part of. So the question is how to become aware of it. So Krishna says in this particular book that it's not very difficult. All we do is have to develop some kind of desire to become aware of him by hearing about him. That's all. It's not like God has hidden himself forever and he doesn't want anyone to talk about it. No, much the difference. The contrary, Krishna, or God, whoever you want to call him, he's anxious to explain himself. And it just requires some hearing and some intelligence to understand. For instance, nowadays, the material scientists, they claim they figured out everything, and one thing they figured out is that there's no God. There is a God. It's them. Because in the absence of no God, someone must take his position. Because someone has to be the greatest. And as far as they're concerned, they're the greatest. They say that everything came about by accident. So if we believe them, then we have to understand that the sun has come about by accident. The sun, which is giving off unlimited heat and light, for us, practically perpetually, just came about by accident. Now, if the sun came about by accident, according to their theory, then why can't they create a similar accident? After all, accidents are pretty easy, you know, to create. Just take two cars together and smash them, and you got an accident. So if they figure out the sun is just one big accident, why don't they create a small accident? Like make a little sun, the size of, you know, maybe this clock here, and let it circulate around this room here, and we could save so much money on electricity. And we wouldn't have to worry about the winter because that little sun would heat up the room here. So why can't they make a little sun since they figured out the big sun was just an accident? So surely they can make another accident smaller. But they can't do that. They can't even make a sun the size of a thimble and have it circulate anywhere. All they can talk about, accidents. But if everything was accidental, then why do they go to school for so many years to get their PhD degree? Why don't they just sit at home and by accident they can get their education? Why go through so much trouble? Why not just sit at home and by accident you can become rich? Why so much endeavor? So the big things that are going on are accident, and their little things that they're doing are all by their intense, immense intelligence. Normally we see a contradiction, but as Goebbels said, if you know who Goebbels was, the propaganda minister, if you repeat a lie enough times, then everyone starts believing it. So, more or less, modern society has been brainwashed. In other words, their brains have been washed away by modern education, where there are people who just taught that everything's an accident, that you came out of the monkeys. If you go to the zoo, surely you can find a monkey there who has a child that looks like your brother. So, we've all been more or less brainwashed. You know, the whole educational system, the internet. Matter of fact, according to the Bhagavatam, one of the books we have, Facebook is where more or less people are just grinning at each other like monkeys. So maybe we are all going, we didn't come from the monkeys, but maybe we're going back to them. So actually real education is just using our normal intelligence, our normal common sense. Just like the scientists, if they could create a male machine and a female machine, because they're creating so many robots now. Everywhere on the internet, if I ever go on the internet, there's always some robot. It's always a lady robot for some reason. Because I guess they can sell the lady robot quicker than the ladies are not so foolish that they want a male robot. They want a real male. But men will take anything. Anything that will listen to them. So if they could create a male robot and a female robot, and when the two robots get together, they make little robots, that would be very nice. So it can make a male robot Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce, and when they get together, they make little Rolls Royces. So that way everyone can get a Rolls Royce, easy. You just put a little gasoline and oil and polish it once in a while, and it grow up to become a big Rolls Royce. But the scientists can't do that. All they can do is talk about how they're going to make everyone into a machine. But they really need male. But Krishna has done that. In 8,400,000 species of life, he's made male machines and female machines. And when they get together, they make little machines. So who's the better scientist? Is it the material scientist or Krishna? Just like if the scientist can make a machine where you put grass in one end and out the other end comes milk, wouldn't that be a nice machine? Everyone can mow their lawn and get a make some ice cream from it. Practical. People wouldn't mind mowing their lawn if they can get ice cream at the end. But the scientists can't make that. But Krishna has made that machine. Unfortunately, they don't appreciate that machine very much because it's called the cow. You put one end, you put grass, the other end comes milk, and then you get ice cream eventually. So actually, it's the cow who should get the Nobel Prize for physics because it's doing the most amazing thing, practical. So the point is that if we just talk about reality, real reality, rather than the manufactured reality, then it actually helps us understand what the nature of reality is. And if we talk about the manufactured reality, I think perhaps we dug up a bone this big and we made a dinosaur that big out of it. Then obviously we're all going to be confused. We're going to search after happiness in all different directions. Instead of going to a place where they talk about God, we'll go to a museum where they talk about dead bones and try to squeeze some happiness out of it. Maybe if we bring our dog there to the museum, if we let him loose, he might be able to squeeze some happiness out of the dead bones. But we're going to have a hard time. So the conclusion is better to talk about things that are real rather than things that are just manufactured or imagined, and then use our intelligence to discern whether we believe in them or not, whether they, we can actually, if they relevant to our lives or just imposed upon us by people who don't really have any interest in our real lives. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? So one suggestion is that just like we have these books, Bhagavad Gita, because one thing about the person who sits up here and gives the lecture, they should give some direction, is that one of the themes I've been talking about lately is that hearing about Krishna should not be just like once a week on Sunday. Just like, for instance, if only once a week you had a meal, and then on Sunday you had a big meal, and for the rest of the week you fasted, it would be very uncomfortable and not very healthy. So similarly, anyone who's interested in developing their spiritual consciousness should have a regular time during the week, every day, as the Bhagavatam suggests, to hear and chant about Krishna. And it's best done in association with others who are hearing about Krishna so we can express our own personal realizations and understanding to each other. That no one knows everything about Krishna. No one is really so exalted that they're the only ones who have something to say about this philosophy. Actually, we all have something to say, and we need to tell it to someone. And if there's no one there to tell it, at least we can talk to the four walls, as Bhakti, talk to someone about it, what we've understood. Because you'd be surprised how much each one of us actually know and how unfortunately, how little opportunities we have to express it to anyone. Now, previously, when everyone lived in the temple, then everyone had usually an opportunity to come to the program every day, and sometimes they had an opportunity to discuss, especially those who were going out and distributing books and things like that. They had some mutual understanding of what they were doing. They can discuss it with each other, like people who work at the same job. They discuss about their job. If you're a school teacher, you can discuss with other school teachers. If you're a doctor, you can discuss with other doctors. So when the devotees were all living in the temple, they could discuss different things that they were all experiencing together. But now that everyone's living on the outside practically, and just a few people live in the temple, therefore it's even more important for the devotees to get together regularly during the week and in small groups and discuss about Krishna with each other. Exactly how to do that, that takes some training and understanding. But even if we just do it, we just hear something and then everyone gets a chance to discuss it, it's very enlivening to hear how Krishna within our heart will actually help us discover what we actually know that we don't even know we knew. When we express it, then we're surprised how much I actually know that I didn't even know I knew about Krishna. And that's very encouraging. That we don't just want to eat and eat and eat, or hear and hear and hear and hear. We also have to do something. We have to express ourselves. Otherwise, we just get big. Spiritually, we just get fatter and fatter and fatter. And then one day we'll burst. So we have to have some avenue to actually express ourselves and distribute this information. And if no one else is around, at least if we have a cat or dog, we should talk to him about it. He may not understand. He might wag his tail and he'll get some benefit for hearing. But somehow or another, we have to have some opportunity to express ourselves. So that's it. Thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.